Sponsorship for this KQED live audio stream comes from Brevo, a customer relationship management platform that can help engage with clients across email, SMS, WhatsApp, and more. For more information, visit brevo.com. That's brevo.com.
I'm Scott Walton. I'm the Executive Director of Communications here. And on behalf of everyone at KQED, thank you so much for coming. We're glad to have you here. And welcome to the KQED studios as well. When we were approached about doing this, participating in this forum several weeks ago, we knew that this was something we wanted to be a part of. We are about serving the people, the local people of our community, and giving them as much information as they can so they can make their own choice. We believe in a variety of ideas and positions, and I think we'll probably hear a lot of that this evening. And, you know, it's not our job to tell you who to vote or even whether to vote. It's our job to make sure you have the resources available so that you can make your own informed decisions. So we hope tonight will be instructional, and if your friends missed it, it will be available online fairly soon. One person deserves special praise from KQED. They were the person who brought the idea to us, who worked with all of the partners, who made sure that all the candidates were invited, who made sure you had food and chairs and everything else. And I just want to acknowledge the KQED Education Network Arts Education Supervisor, Kristen Farr, who's right here. And now it's my pleasure to introduce you to KQED's President and CEO. John Boland may have only joined us last March, but already his impact is really felt around the station. John came to us from Washington, D.C., where he was PBS's first ever Chief Content Officer. Of course, that was a role that was already familiar to him because he had already been KQED's first ever Chief Content Officer, and he served in that role as well as a variety of other senior management roles here for more than a decade before going to Washington. I think everybody on the staff would agree that one of the things we're most excited about, John, is that he's local. He comes from the community, has lived here for more than 25 years, and thus he really understands the needs and the interests of the Bay Area community at large. And we're pleased to have him here with us tonight as well. And so if you'd welcome John Boland.
Thanks, and welcome to KQED. And I'm not going to take too much time because what we really want to do is hear from the candidates. But I'm very glad we're doing this really for three reasons. As Scott mentioned, we have our role in providing news and information so that voters can make informed choices, and also to be a convener of community dialogue. And the opportunity to do that in person as opposed to just over the air is important to us. So that's one reason. But the other reasons really have to do with Kristen's title, and that is arts and education. In addition to being a news and information organization, KQED, as you probably know, is an educational institution. Our roots are very deep in education. What you may not know is that when we were founded more than 50 years ago, it's actually members of the San Francisco School Board and the Oakland Unified School District Board who were involved in creating KQED, and we were originally licensed to one of the school boards. So we began as an educational broadcaster and continue to be, and particularly in the last 10 years through our program Spark, we've been working in arts education and providing educators, teachers with resources as well as professional development to keep arts education in the classroom. So for those three reasons, news and elections and arts and education, we're really glad to be hosting tonight's forum, and we hope you have a very informed discussion that helps you make decisions about the school board. And the other thing for me personally is in the little town where my family lives in New Jersey. When I was a kid, my father was president of the school board, so it's important. Thanks.
Good evening and welcome. My name is Tom DeCaney. I'm the executive director of Performing Arts Workshop, an arts education organization here in San Francisco. And we're excited to welcome you on behalf of the Partnership for Creative Learning. The partnership is a newly formed within the past year local action group dedicated to educational excellence for all San Francisco students. And we're excited to have you here tonight for tonight's forum. I'm going to do a brief introduction, and then I'll introduce you to our moderator for the evening. So, first of all, I really want to thank KQED for being the event host this evening. It's been very generous of you to give us space and technical support and also to broadcast the forum tomorrow online via podcast. So we're really fortunate to hopefully get the word out. So we want to thank KQED for that very generous involvement. Next, I'd like to thank our sponsoring organizations. The partnership is a coalition of organizations, but certain organizations stepped up tonight to sponsor this forum. And they are Performing Arts Workshop, Streetside Stories, Out of Sight Youth Arts Center, LEAP Imagination and Learning, San Francisco Opera, San Francisco Performances, the Arts Providers Alliance of San Francisco, the San Francisco Symphony, and BayCat. So thank you to our sponsors. A few just comments about tonight based on our status as 501c3 nonprofit organizations. This is not an endorsement of any specific candidate. This is an informational event to have you learn more about the platforms of each school board candidate. All candidates running have been invited to tonight's forum. They've also all been asked to complete a questionnaire. You'll learn a little bit more about this from Moy, but the completed questionnaires, along with bios from every candidate, will be posted on the Performing Arts Workshop website, www.performingartsworkshop.org, and they will all be online tomorrow at 5 p.m. close of business. So you'll be able to look more deeply into specific candidates' platforms and forward that on to friends or family who might be voting in San Francisco or might just be more interested in learning more. Also, within regards to our 501c3 status, there is no fundraising tonight. So we ask that everybody reframe either as candidates or supporters or nonprofits or whoever we might be or what we might be fundraising for. As important as that is, we ask you to please refrain from any fundraising activity this evening. I explained the questionnaire, and the questionnaire was sent out a couple weeks ago, and the basis for tonight's questions is based on that questionnaire. And I will let our moderator, Moyang, explain more about the forum in a bit. If you need the facilities, they are down the hall to your left. Please take care of yourself as need be throughout the evening. We also ask that you please turn off cell phones, pagers, or any other noise-making devices that could interrupt us. We will be recording, so we'd hate to have it interrupted either tonight or for the recording purposes. So with that, I'd like to introduce tonight's moderator, Moyang. Moy is the former program director for performing arts at the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, where she served for the past 8 years in the program director role. Many of us in the arts and education arena know her not only as perhaps our program officer, but as a voice for the role of arts in transforming education. She has been pivotal in developing the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation's arts education portfolio, as well as a leader in the field nationally in the role of arts in transforming public education, both from a perspective of educational justice, but also as somebody who the arts have changed her own life, and is also a jazz singer. So you may catch her in another life, in this life, in a different moment, very much in this life. Either as recorded or sometimes it feels like another life, doesn't it? as a performer herself. So without further ado, I will introduce Moyang.
Tom, where were you when I needed to write up my bio? Wow. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, everyone, for coming and gathering closer together, and thank you to all the candidates for coming and making some time this evening to hear about, for you to hear about what they care about, what we all care about collectively, and also what you would like to see happen if you were in this role. So what I'd like to do is introduce the candidates, number one, go over the format for the conversation this evening, and in alphabetical order, and I should just say, Bill Barnes will be coming. It isn't just a surprise seat As far as we know, he may be doing a dramatic entrance. So let me start from the first. Beyond Bill is Winifred Dejani, immediately to my left, Natasha Hain, Omar Khalif, Hydra Mendoza, Emily Maras, Starchild on the end. There are three candidates who were confirmed to come, but unfortunately, Margaret Brodkin couldn't make it because of a prior commitment. Tom Chan had an unexpected work commitment, and Kim Shri Mafas was unable to come because of illness. So we're going to have nine candidates all sitting up here, but things do happen. So thank you to the candidates who are sitting up here now. A little bit about the format. I won't have to go over fundraising. No endorsement. Thank you, Tom. That was just great. But I will just say that, just to reiterate, the questionnaires that each of the candidates will be completing or have already completed, and there's a series of questions really outlining what they care about, their opinions, and their platform with regards to arts, education, and education, will be, as well as their bios, will be on Performing Arts Workshop's website by the end of the day tomorrow. And again, the website address is www.performingartsworkshop.org. Why are you smiling? Thank you. I'm hoping for one of my next gigs of doing voiceovers. You know, got to put my kids through college. So the format. What I'd like to invite each of the candidates to do is to make an opening remark. You each have 3 minutes. I will go in alphabetical order. And then we'll have three questions. Each of you will be asked a question each. Each of you will have an opportunity to respond. One thing that you will not have to worry about, either from me going like this or like that, we have a timekeeper in front, Anne, who will remind all of us when your time is up, and you'll have a 30-second call, and then it'll be time, okay? The first two questions were chosen by a group of San Francisco arts education stakeholders, and the final question will be based on the candidate responses. There'll be no formal Q&A with the public. I will trust that you'll get very zen and listen fully and deeply. And the last 20 minutes will be devoted to a meet and greet with the candidates. So I hope you'll stay until 8:30. So let me open it up with Winifred. You have 3 minutes to make an opening remarks.
Well, good evening, and I'm so happy to be here at this very important forum on the arts. I'm running for the Board of Education because I want to preserve our heritage of opportunity through education. It was opportunity like that allowed my grandmother, who never did speak English, to raise four boys, and two of them were able to go on to Ivy League schools just through virtue of a good public education. I'm a credentialed teacher. I love languages. I have a master's in French and teaching English to speakers of other languages. But my first degree was a bachelor in fine arts. And I worked for many years as a designer, a textile, and in the fashion industry before moving on and getting a master's in French. And through that opportunity, I was able to really enjoy and participate many different forms of arts in this country, and then through extensive travel outside this country, appreciate the art and culture of other countries, and come to the realization that art really is an expression of history and culture, but it's also a universal way to communicate across culture, and it's unique in that sense, and it really touches that, I think, the most profound sense of our humanity, and that's why I really believe it's such an important, or should be such an important part of our children's education. Art is still very an important part of my life. I try to attend an exhibit or a performance at least once a week. This Saturday, I'm actually going to participate in professional development with the DeYoung Museum to find ways to intertwine art into teaching language, so I'm very excited about that. And As far as my role, if I should be elected to the Board of Education, I really support a very robust, sequential art education for our students. I think it's very important. I think it's irreplaceable. There's nothing that can quite equal that in developing our youth intellectually, cognitively, emotionally, aesthetically, and it can apply to across the board to all the core curriculum. I'm very happy, actually, with the progress that's been made with the Art Education Master Plan. I think they're really doing a good job. And from what I understand, they've been spending their first few years just raising awareness amongst leadership at schools, making them appreciate the value of art, the important role it plays in our youth. And I think that's important because without that, you won't get them to advocate for the time and the resources that we really need to have that art education integrated as a key part of our core curriculum. So I would like to support their efforts should I be elected. I think they need more resources, they need more help to do the good job they're doing. And I'd like to end with a quote by Salman Rushdie, which is, "Language is courage, the ability to conceive a thought, to speak it, and by doing so, make it real." And that language, I mean, that's language in the broadest sense of the word. Language is dance, as painting, as writing, in all those sense. And that's what we want our youth to be able to do. So I'd like to support them in a good art program.
Winifred,
thank you.
That was a lovely beginning. One thing I just wanted to make mention, I forgot earlier, is that we are not only conducting this in English, but the remarks will be translated simultaneously in Cantonese and in Spanish. Just as a little glitch, we have a little... We didn't send that lovely gentleman over there because he was naughty and he's in a timeout. But we sent him over there because there's a circuit question, and so it was just easier to have the Cantonese translation over there. So just so you know, we weren't segregating. I'm next, so please, for all the candidates, please speak, not necessarily slowly, but clearly. Next, Natasha Hain.
Thank you. I'm Natasha Hain. I'm the senior partner at California Education Partners, and I can't tell you how excited I am to be here this evening, because not only did I spend the day down in Microsoft thinking about data systems to inform instruction, but also the arts are infused throughout my life in a way that I rarely get to talk about on the campaign trail. So I'm thrilled to be able to tell you about it today. I was blessed to audition for the San Francisco Girls Chorus here in San Francisco at age 7. And through that early experience in the arts, I learned not only the power of music to transform lives, I had a community, I found a form of self-expression that has carried me through thick and thin throughout my lifetime. I had a cultural opportunity for cultural exploration and for a sense of global connectivity from the earliest possible age that has really defined my whole life. After graduating from Yale, I went to teach English in the South Bronx. I taught 6th, 7th, and 8th grade English language arts and founded the school's drama program there and wove arts education into my curriculum in any way possible, knowing that the arts is how we engage learning, how we create that sense of all of the buzzwords around 21st century skills. Those are the arts. It's creativity, it's group thinking, it's thinking about different ways of approaching the same problems we've presented for time and again. So I've been back here for a decade here in San Francisco working in education and committing my life to improving public education for students here in San Francisco and throughout California, but the arts are still a part of my life. I have a master's degree in music from the San Francisco Conservatory. I founded a nonprofit women's vocal ensemble here called Musée, and I continue to be a strong advocate for infusing arts into every part of our education system. I serve as the chair of the After School for All Council here in San Francisco, and as a part of that, I've really started to understand what we need to be doing to continue to strengthen the system of coherence and leveraging this incredible community we have of artists, of creative thinkers, of incredible cultural institutions in this city, and how we can build partnerships for every school. I see San Francisco as having an opportunity to lead the way for the state, and the Board of Education needs to make double down its commitment to the Arts Education Master Plan, but also think about how to translate and communicate better exactly the power of arts education in our students' lives so that we can continue to make the case, both for resources at the state level and here locally, but also to understand what we've been doing here as a community. I look forward to hearing your ideas and to talking more. Thank you.
Thank you, Natasha. Now, Omar Khalif.
I will be nice, Hydra. I think I'm about to put the candidates at a very unfair advantage. Paco, so when you go and tell my wife tonight, tell her I represented the family really well. Thank you, Paco. Wow. The very first book I've ever read from cover to cover was The Business of Music in 1980. 23 years later, I published my first song. It was in the movie Deliver Us from Eva. The second song was in 2004, which was recorded by En Vogue. So when you talk about art, so I understand arts really, really well. And although I'm not a musician or an artist and I can do canvas work, I can admire all of the works that people do. So tonight you'll see my art, and it's going to be live at KQED. So I want to start with my children to show you how serious I am about art. My now 14-year-old daughter had her first copyright at the age of 9, and she was part of the Global Arts Society, which afforded her the ability to, her first copyright at 9 years old. So it's kind of messed her life up a little bit because that allowed her to go to Senegal, Dakar, Spain, and she kind of traveled the country. So when it came time for her to get into school, everything was pretty much boring by the time she was 10. So she was a hard child to deal with. And so my second daughter won a number of poetry contests and piano playing contests. And we've been to Vegas where it's the Johnny Rockets and the star power, the 5,000 girls running and screaming and dancing. And they managed to win first place out of a nationwide competition. Somebody's at soccer right now. So I understand the arts really, really well, because as we move into the 21st century, the 21st century is about creativity. We're moving into the creative phase. You can put everything on the internet, but you cannot put your art and creativity on the internet and transport it. That's something that has to be real and real wholesome right here, right now. So again, I'm a card-carrying member of Harry Fox, BMI, and ASCAP right now. So I got some publishing checks at home on the couch. They're about $2, but hey. I never cash them. Anyway, so arts is real. I mean, it's real. It's real. It allows the brain to really develop and to have all of the different triggers. Because, again, you may not be good in science, but you have to figure out through art how to make the subjects come alive. And so, again, four daughters. They're all dancing performers. I have one daughter right now. I have two daughters in college, but one is a part of the jazz club that performs at halftime all over Texas. So this is where I am at art. And again, so every Saturday, for the last 6 years, I've driven to Oakland to Destin the Dance Studios and let the little girls dance, and I find the nearest coffee shop for 3 hours a week. Saturday, Monday, and Tuesday. Tell my wife I did good, Paco.
Thank you, Omar.
You were nice.
And now, Hydra Mendoza.
Great. Thank you very much for having me. It's always nice to be at KQED. We were just here a couple of weeks ago viewing speaking in tongues and really understanding second language acquisition, which to me is another form of art that is really important for our students to learn. So I'm Hydra Mendoza. I'm a parent of two kids in the public school system, and I'm currently the vice president of the Board of Education. And I also serve as Mayor Newsom's education advisor, and my responsibility there is to build the relationship between the schools and the city, which has been a very stretched relationship, if non-existent. So I'm really honored to be here, and I'm showing my pride for the Giants, and they won tonight, and I'm really excited for them as well, which to me is another art form. And I say that wholeheartedly because I feel like I have not one artistic bone in my body. And it's through education that I've actually learned to appreciate the value of art in our schools and the importance of it being in our curriculum. And coming into education, I have to say it wasn't one of the first things that came to mind. But as I raised both of my children, it was very natural for me as a parent to be sure that they were exposed to every possible form of adventure and experience, which always included music and dance. And living in San Francisco, the opportunity to go on a Wednesday night anywhere in the city and take in a play or a show or listen to live music, and which is one of the beautiful opportunities that I think we have as citizens, as residents here in San Francisco. I actually served on the advisory committee for the Arts Education Master Plan initially, and I have to say that was one of the most amazing experiences for me in terms of the idea of our arts being part of the fabric of the work that we want to do in order to help our students achieve. I was the former executive director for an organization called Parents for Public Schools, and we really empowered parents to be part of the education and learning for our students. And through my role there, I befriended a wonderful woman named Carol Shorenstein Hayes, who had this fabulous idea of bringing our students down when the Lion King was in town. And we coordinated 1,900 students to come down to view the play and to afterwards listen to the artists and listen to the folks that worked on the lighting and the people that helped in usher. And that, I think, was the turning point for me, when it just really dawned on me that our students don't have those kinds of opportunities to step into a theater and see live performances. So we have to bring those performances to them. We have to be able to bring them into these performances, whether it's at the school or in these wonderful community-based organizations that help to support teaching and learning for our students. With that, the work that we've been doing, I think, has just been tremendous, and I'm thrilled to have a master plan to help guide us and some funding behind it, albeit not enough. Thank you.
Thank you. And now, Emily Morasse.
Hi, everybody. I'm Emily Morasse. I am a parent of a third grader and a sixth grader in the public school system, and I'm a graduate of the San Francisco public school system, K-12. And my third grade teacher, Mr. Erlenbaugh, really infused art into our curriculum. I'm still in touch with him. He still lives in the city. He had us do a mural of the Underground Railroad. We learned to knit. He took us to the San Francisco Opera. We saw the Japanese tea ceremony. He staged Gilbert and Sullivan's HMS Pinafore with us 10-year-olds. It was really just amazing, and it's really influenced me. I've had a wonderful career working for AT&T in Tokyo. I worked in the first Clinton White House on trade policy. I now work for the mayor's head of the Commission on the Status of Women, but it all started in a kindergarten classroom here in the San Francisco public school system. For the past 8 years, I've been a volunteer at my girls' schools, raising money, recruiting families, preserving the legacy of the Japanese bilingual program that my parents helped to found 37 years ago. I've served as chair of the Parent Advisory Council that provides a voice of parents to the school board. And in 2008, I served on the Prop A steering committee to raise teacher salaries. We have got to do a better job of keeping our families in San Francisco. And what other school district offers Chinese, Japanese, Korean, Tagalog in their school district? But arts plays a very important role in that. And we have a wonderful School of the Arts. I just want to mention one idea that I have. I'm really committed to seeing that SOTA moves to 135 Van Ness. One idea to be able to do that financially is to dedicate the first 5 floors to the high school, but then to build a high-rise hotel above that to house the musicians and the opera singers and ballerinas that come to that area. But in the building of the hotel, bring students along from City College, from high school, about how to build a building. And then in the running of that hotel, training kids about the hospitality industry. So I'm really committed to realizing that vision for the Ruth Asawa School of the Arts. I'm supported by the Parent Political Action Committee. It's the first parent PAC of parents of school-aged children. I'm also supported by the United Educators of San Francisco, which represents 6,000 of our public school teachers and classroom aides, and I'm hoping for your support tonight as well. Thank you very much.
And now Starchild.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. My name is Starchild, and I believe that art is more than anything else, perhaps, about creativity and thinking outside the box. And I think that I am probably the candidate in this race most willing to think outside the box and to challenge the status quo. And I primarily see myself doing that on behalf of education consumers, that is, students and parents. I don't have any vested interest in the system as it is now. I don't have any high-profile endorsements from sitting politicians or educational unions or corporations or anything else of this nature. I believe, although correct me if I'm wrong, feel free, any of the other candidates here, I believe I'm the only non-Democrat in the race. I'm very committed to getting the power back to the students and parents and seeing public education in the broadest possible terms, which means also, you know, those of you who may be listening outside the government school system, you know, you may have children who go to schools that are, in my view, also public schools. They're schools that serve the public. Just like a restaurant can be a public restaurant that serves the public, it doesn't mean that it has to be owned and controlled and operated by government. And I think that these schools, as well as parents and children who homeschool, sometimes get lost in these conversations. You know, it's a shame that sometimes it seems like, well, we're only talking about and we only care about the children in government schools. And while those children are certainly important, I want to really try to speak to the whole community. Now, a lot of the reason that people send their children and children choose to go outside the government school system, even though that means they have to essentially pay twice, once as taxpayers supporting the government schools, and then again to go to a private school or to afford the various materials and so forth necessary for homeschooling, is because the government schools are largely perceived as failing in various ways. And I think this is unacceptable. We're all paying for them. I have some radical plans to help fix the government schools. One of them is, according to SF Budget Blog, only 45% of the resources going to government schools here in San Francisco are going to the classroom. That's as compared to a 62% statewide average. Again, I think this is unacceptable. I want to see teachers, who I think are generally considered to have the most important and difficult job in education, paid more. I want to raise teacher salaries in San Francisco and do that by lowering the salaries of administrators who are non-teaching, many of whom are now currently making six-figure salaries at taxpayer expense. I think that's too much. I don't think any government employees in San Francisco need to be making six-figure salaries. We have thousands of homeless people on the street and many pressing needs, a huge budget deficit. I think we can cut those salaries and get the power back as much as possible to parents, students, and teachers. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. So for our first question, since we started with Winifred, we're going to go in reverse alpha order and start with Starchild, if that's all right. The first question is a perfect segue. What would be your top two funding priorities for San Francisco United School District?
My top two funding priorities, can you clarify what you mean by that?
Perhaps, perhaps not so elegantly, what would you think is the most important two things that the district should be spending its money on moving forward?
Okay. Well, part of my plan is I want to the maximum extent allowable by state law, put the teachers at each government school in the district in charge of that school. I want to, rather than as a school board member and the board handing down these priorities and decisions, I really want to let the teachers, who I think are in the best position to know how best to educate children, make those decisions. I want to put them in charge of budgets for each school, in charge of curricula, in charge of hiring and firing of non-teaching personnel, and pretty much across the board, as much power as I can get into the hands of this teacher site council at each school. And then in turn, the teachers at that local level would be more accountable to the students and the parents going to that school, I think, than the school board and the superintendent and these people at the district level are currently accountable. So children would be able, under my plan, to select which teachers they wanted, and teachers would be required to put their lesson plans online, and there would also be biographical information about each teacher online, and a video perhaps of the teacher in the classroom. So as a student or parent entering the school, you would be able to look and have this information online at your fingertips to really see, okay, what's this teacher's teaching style? What's his or her background? You know, is this going to be appropriate for my style of learning or my student's style of learning? And so funding priorities would be much more based on what the people most directly involved with the money being spent actually wanted. And that is what I would strive to implement to the extent that I am able to do so if I were elected to school board.
Great. Thank you, Starchild. Emily?
My top two priorities would be the core curriculum, which is a challenge because of the chronic underfunding by the state. But by core curriculum, I do mean language arts, math, science, and the arts. I mean, I think the Arts Education Master Plan establishes how critical the arts are to our core curriculum. Secondly, funding priority would be for special needs kids, whether that's underperforming kids, kids with learning or physical challenges, but also high-achieving kids. We don't often talk about the special needs of high-achieving kids to be challenged in the classroom.
Great. Thank you. So my two funding priorities would be ensuring that there's opportunities for all of our students to be prepared for college and career and programming that contributes to student achievement, which includes arts, second language acquisition, and other types of programming that helps to enhance student achievement. So it's not just the core curriculum, although I feel that second language acquisition and arts are part of the core curriculum. And then I also feel very strongly about investing in human capital. I think that we can have the greatest plan, but if we don't have the proper people and great people implementing the plan, then the plan is useless. So I think we really do need to invest in professional development and supporting our teachers and our staff to ensure that who's in front of our students providing the success for our students are well supported. And I think that the superintendent zones are areas in which we can really focus energies around building on the human capital.
Hydra, that's hard to follow. Did I tell you my daughter's going to Shanghai this summer to perform? I didn't tell you that. First of all, what I would, the two things that I would focus on would be, first and foremost, the needs of the children. And if we can get each child funded at maybe $12,000 per year per head, per student, I think we can cover all of their needs. So we need to find a way to eliminate the waste at the top to get more focus into the classroom with the resources. So again, the children, and I don't care how we get there. We just need to get there.
So we're at a unique crossroads in terms of our school finance system. We're in a crisis, and the state isn't doing its job, but we have the state giving us more and more flexibility at the local level to set local priorities. Coupled with that, we have a bunch of local revenue resources that we as a city are very unique in having committed in Prop H, which is the sports, libraries, arts, and music funds, and then in Prop A, which is support for teacher salaries and professional development. So I think it's incumbent upon the next school board and us as a community to think about defining and rethinking local budgeting for schools. And what my two priorities would be aligned with the overall goal of making sure every student is graduating. It says so in the mission statement of the Unified School District, graduating prepared for college, career, and meaningful participation in the 21st century. And we even spell out what some of those skills are. We have the right goal right now. The idea now is the two priorities I see are, number one, recruiting, preparing, and supporting the world's best teachers, making sure we have meaningful professional development, and Prop A starts having some funding available for us here to do that really uniquely, and that means arts professional development, like the kind Winifred was talking about here, making sure that all of our teachers have that embedded, thoughtful, professional ongoing support. And then secondly, investing in infrastructure and making sure that we have information and communication to all of our partners throughout the city, to parents, to our important after-school providers, to the city stakeholders, to every community member, so that we know what's going on in the schools and we can engage and support it well. So those are the two funding priorities, I would say.
My two funding priorities are, first of all, a rich, diverse core curriculum that includes art and language arts. And education happens in a classroom between two individuals, a teacher and a child. And I think we need to start rethinking how we value our teachers and what we expect them to do and how we're going to compensate them for it. I think there needs to be a deeper discussion than just, you know, a little bit of money here or there, an extra $50 a week. I think we really need to think how much time you want your teachers to spend in the classroom and how much time it really takes to educate a child to the level that you want them to do. And this means addressing the high achievers, addressing the struggling students. What does that take? It's implied that teachers are going to work overtime, but they never get overtime. I think it's just sort of understood they're not going to work that 40-hour work week. They're probably going to work the 60-hour work week. And a lot of teachers get to middle school, high school, you have them managing maybe sometimes 120 individuals. And we should ask ourselves, is it really realistic that you expect our teachers to really go in and address the needs of every individual students when you don't support them and you don't give them the class size to make that a reality? So, yes, curriculum and teachers, but give them a job that they can succeed at. Don't set them up for failure. Don't put them in a position where they actually just end up being classroom managers and they can't practice their craft. So all of the attendant services and support that goes with that. And then I think everything else can emanate out from that.
Thank you, everyone. Question two. I'd like to start back this way. So Winifred, you'll go up first. Research has demonstrated that the arts can play a critical role in closing the achievement gap between African American and Latino students and their, Asian and Caucasian peers. What connections do you make between the district's existing arts education master plan and the district's strategic plan beyond the talk? And lastly, how should those connections manifest in the district's budgeting over the next 3 years?
Well, I think the objective of the strategic plan is to bring equity and equal access to an equally challenging curriculum across the district. And from what I see what's going on with the Art Education Master Plan, that's also the same objective. So there's a lot of dovetailing there between the two. I think actually the Art Education Master Plan can be folded into the objectives of the strategic plan. I think right now we've been a challenge because for many years up till now, a lot of schools weren't receiving any art education, some of the middle schools, some of the elementary schools. And if you want to talk about an achievement gap going into the school of the arts, a lot of students weren't even prepared to even demonstrate potential talent because they didn't even have an art education to make them aware that maybe they had a talent that could have been demonstrated. So at a very fundamental level, if you don't give students access to that opportunity across the board in the arts, you will have the achievement gap and all the attendant things that art brings in developing the intellectual, the cognitive, and all those other things that are so important to the development of our students. So I think the purpose and the goals of both the strategic plan and the Art Education Master Plan are really very similar. And I think by supporting them in achieving their ends, that will be a very important step towards closing the achievement gap.
So beyond the talk, the district strategic plan articulates three areas of goal. First is access and equity, the second is achievement, and the third is accountability. And the extent to which all of those have components of arts education as necessary ingredients to get to true equity in this school district and actual achievement, I think that we haven't done the work necessary to elevate that and make that clear to everyone involved in our schools and make sure that we're not running on two separate tracks, but that it's one commitment, one goal, one community that we have, that we all work together, it's not an add-on or an ancillary after-school afterthought, that this is all part of the work of closing the achievement gap, raising excellence for every student in San Francisco. So I see them as part and parcel. I see a need for the beyond the talk to become more concretized over the next couple years, and I think that's the opportunity to make sure that arts is interwoven into every piece of that plan.
It's concretized. It is now.
I am definitely in a room full of artists. This is my third time running, and this is the first time, and I appreciate, you know, your questions. This is actually the very first time I've really had to contemplate and think about the questions that you're really asking. Seriously, and no, that's a good thing, but I'm out of shape because I've been running in a San Francisco election, and it's everything from God knows to who knows. So can you please repeat that question, and I'm going to do the best I can to answer that, because this is a really, really complex question.
Absolutely. It's a long question.
Yeah.
It was for me. I'm noted for doing three-part questions. Thanks, Tom. It's only two parts. Research has demonstrated that the arts can play a critical role in closing the achievement gap between African-American and Latino students and their Asian and Caucasian peers. What connections do you make between the district's existing arts education master plan and the district's strategic plan beyond the talk? First part. Second part, how should those connections manifest themselves in the district's budgeting over the next 3 years?
Wow. Well, like a writer who's hit the wall, like a songwriter who cannot find that one phrase, I'm going to pass on that one. That one's going to really make me think.
You know, you can think about it. We can
pass, and
you can come back.
No,
it's okay.
I don't. No, no. It deserves more than the jibber jabber that would run out of my mouth.
Agreed.
To fill in some space.
But
I'm not going to disrespect the question.
No, absolutely. So let me just say that as the moderator, that we'll pass. But as you think about it, we can come back to you if you want to answer part of it, some facet of it, or all of it. We're good. Okay? Emily. Or rather, no, not Emily. Sorry. It's Hydra.
Thank you. I have to agree with Omar in one regard, which is your questionnaire was extremely thought-provoking and probably one of the most challenging questionnaires that I've had to complete because it didn't have the regular questions that we get just, you know, worded differently. So there was no cut and paste involved in your questionnaire. And I had to send the kids to their room so that I can complete my questionnaire while I was working on that. So with regards to the strategic plan and the arts education master plan, I think access and equity and accountability. Those are the two areas that come to mind when wanting to see how those two fuse. And I think it's really important to note something with regards to our lowest performing schools. So what the focus has been in many of our lowest performing schools is how to raise your API, how to get your kids to test well, so you spend a lot of time on math and language arts. So what's missing in all of that? It's the piece that creates joyful learners, which is part of our strategic plan. And that's the part that I think is missing in wanting to bring all of this together. So we need to remind and train and support our schools in recognizing how you create those joyful learners, and you do that by raising well-rounded students and being able to provide them with as many opportunities as possible. And I don't think that we do that when all we're doing is talking about math and language arts. And I, you know, just kind of going back to the superintendent zone, I think for many years that's been what we've been doing. And that's also the schools where our teacher turnover has been tremendous. And so you get a lot of inconsistency with your teachers. And you all know that when you get a teacher that understands how art gets infused with core curriculum, just as Natasha did with her students, then that brings a classroom to life. But they have to be able to stay in that classroom consistently.
So I'm going to acknowledge Antigone Trimis of SFUSD, who has a whole paper on this topic. So I just...
The advisory
committee. So I just had a chance to skim it. But the three goals of the strategic plan are access and equity, academic achievement, and accountability. In terms of access and equity, it's really uneven throughout this school district. We have some schools that raise $500,000 annually in parent fundraising efforts, and then we have other schools that have no capacity to do that. And Hydra and some other parents are working on EdMatch, which will try to raise the same amount of dollars being raised by the well-funded schools to allocate throughout the district. In terms of budgeting, the master plan calls for a liaison in every school to help with the implementation of the master plan. I don't know where that is right now. It's likely that those positions have been cut. And I think in terms of budgeting in the next 3 years, we need to look at the arts master plan as a roadmap, as one of the inputs as we do that planning.
It's Starchild again. Yes, I think this kind of thing, thinking that we need a master plan for all the schools, you know, whether it's an arts master plan, which frankly I haven't even looked at the detail of and really don't care that much, frankly, because I think, the arts education decisions should be made at the classroom level by the teachers. I am familiar with at least the broad outlines of the so-called strategic plan, and frankly, I think it's a bit of a joke. As Emily just mentioned, the equity is really uneven among the schools. There is no freedom of access. Students can't attend their first choice school. We have had many students for years, going so-called 0-for-7. You know, the district lets people choose their top 7 schools, and sometimes the students don't get into any of those 7 schools. Now, supposedly they're reworking the whole system, but I from what I've seen, I don't have any confidence that the new school access plan is going to be any better overall than the old school access plan. It'll be more neighborhood-based, which means that since some neighborhoods are much richer than others, that, again, you will have that uneven equality throughout the schools. Achievement, well, you know, part of the question dealt with the achievement gap, and another big achievement gap is that homeschooled students regularly outperform students from who went through the government schools, which is kind of amazing when you think about it, because the homeschooled students are learning from their parents and people outside the system that supposedly don't have any expertise in education, but somehow they're coming out better educated than the kids in the government schools on average. As far as accountability, we recently, as candidates, had a chance to meet with some of the district staff and superintendent, and I asked the superintendent, I would like to see published online a list of every single district employee by name, position, and what he or she actually does, and salary, and what he or she actually does on a day-to-day basis in simple, plain English. And he said, we can't, that would be too difficult to provide. We have 8,000, teachers, blah, 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 so... I see them, scoring an F in accountability.
Thank you. I know you're ready to start having a conversation, but one more. Oh, you did. Good.
I think what threw me was the whole achievement gap comparison, because every time I hear about the achievement gap comparison, it doesn't set well with me, because again we're talking about the devaluing of people. I don't see the achievement gap as being I mean, if we're just talking here in San Francisco, I don't see it as being that wide as San Francisco promotes it to be. I guess it's to get additional fundings or what have you. But I'm a board of trustee at Gateway High School, and two of my daughters also graduated from KIPP Bayview Academy. And so when we talk about the API scores, the same children that live in Bayview scored 825 this year on their API. So, and then they're getting scholarships to go off to these boarding and parochial schools. And so when I look at the achievement gap, yes, over here to the right, it may be failing, but over here to the left, it's excelling. And so I don't look at it like that. And so when we talk about arts, if the children are not evaluated coming into the school system early on, oftentimes they're not even engaged until they're in the third grade, which is probably about the age of 7 right now. And if you tell me that the personality is already kind of entrenched by the age of 5 and you don't engage this kid or you don't evaluate them, and then they may be displaying their artistry, but then it's deemed as being a disruptive child because we haven't taken the time to evaluate this child and see what his or her learning styles are and is. So when I hear the achievement gap thing, it just really tears me apart because I believe the gap is more of a myth. If I had a penny for every adult that from now till time ends who said they're going to run, they're closing the achievement gap, or they're going to fight for closing the achievement gap, I would be a very rich man. The achievement gap is getting wider and wider and wider. But every year, from the city level to the federal level, people are running on closing the African-American achievement gap, which leads me to believe that it doesn't exist. Nah.
That deserves a larger conversation. I'm looking at the time. It's 7:30. We've all sat here for an hour, and I know this may be a little unorthodox, Tom. I hope you don't mind. I'd like all of you, and candidates included, so you have to back your chairs a little bit, otherwise you'll be eating your mic, and that would not be a good thing. Just stand up and stretch before we go into the final stretch of the third question. We could. Actually, we're going to go right to it now. Come on, Antigone. You can stretch a lot. That's it. A little more creative. You know, it's the end of a long day, and I think it's great that all of us are here sitting quietly and really listening as well as speaking. So, does that feel better? And in another half hour, I'm going to roll in some drinks. Who would like a part? No. I would like that, right? What do you think, Kiff? Just roll it in. Okay, that's another conversation. Tom had asked me, based on some of your responses, both in the questionnaire as well as on the stage, an individualized question. But I think what's really clear, if you don't mind, I'm going to stay with the format, give you each a question, same question, because what I've heard from all of you from the very beginning, from the top of this conversation, is a deep personal and seminal experiences that have moved you, whether it's you personally, your families, biological as well as created, how deep it is. So I think you've testified clearly what it's meant in your life, how it's been interwoven in your personal and professional lives, and the question and the issue of access and equity comes up again and again and again. So what I would like to do is ask you, and though we asked this the first time, and even in 2B, if you wouldn't mind thinking about you've mentioned already, but I want you to scratch just a little deeper and be really pragmatic. And as Starchild said earlier, speak clearly with not a lot of lingo. I'm not doing it as elegantly as you are, Starchild. But I would like you to think about what are your initial suggestions to increase access to arts learning so it is more equitable. One or two. If you have a whole list, great, but one or two. And I say that because given that the funding constraints are very deep for the educational system, statewide, regionally, district, school, we can just go up and down the chain. It's really deep. And that's a state budget issue, much less an education system issue. So I want to just, while we're focusing to some extent on the public school system, I'm happy to, if you want to make your remarks and extend that, as Starchild has already done, to encompass community schools, charter schools, homeschooled kids, I'm fine. So I'm just going to leave it to you to respond. What is your initial suggestion or suggestions to increase access to arts learning given the funding constraints we are currently living under? And just two alone, funding for the arts is included in one-third of the Prop H funding called SLAM, Sports, Libraries, Arts, and Music. SLAM, along with the other two-thirds of Prop H, was cut by 25% pursuant to a decline in San Francisco city revenues. Second, of the 715,000, and that's 715, a year in state arts and music block grant funding, the school district, San Francisco's, has proposed flexing 680,000 of that, that's most of it, per year to backfill deficits in the general fund, since the state government allowed these funds to be flexed. This totals in the next 2 years a loss of $1.36 million in cuts to the arts over the next 2 years. So that's only a small tip of the iceberg. So I turn the question to all of you. If you don't mind, Winifred, if you wouldn't mind going first, and if you want to pass, we can do the same as we did for Omar, if you want a few minutes to think about it. One question.
Okay.
See, I did warn you. Tom did warn you. I usually ask three parts. It's okay. One question. I just laid out the context. Given the funding constraints, I just named a couple of them, what would your initial suggestion be to increase access to arts learning for all children?
Well, from what I understand, most of the funding does come from Proposition 8. Mm-hmm. So access, working with...
H.
Oh, I meant H.
Okay.
I'm sorry, H. H. So working within the constraints and provided that money is still there, I think the best thing that you can do is the way you develop the curriculum to develop more art into the core classes, integrate it. Of course, you want to have your art, your separate individualized art classes, but I think you can be creative and bring art in, not necessarily with more physical resources, but I think with instruction. So on the human resource end, mm-hmm. find more creative ways to integrate it over a broader range of areas and topics, and maybe think of more. You can teach things creatively. Maybe have one big project that's very resource intensive,
right.
And others that does promote and engender creative thinking, mm-hmm. and engagement that maybe isn't as resource intensive.
Right.
So use the resources. Maybe have one key project, mm-hmm. like I said, that has a lot of materials involved,
right.
and others that maybe don't, but are equally creatively promoting.
Great.
Yeah, I think a creative teacher can probably do a lot. It takes work and planning, that's
mm-hmm.
the thing. So it would take that commitment, and it does involve the commitment of the human resources to do that type of planning.
A pragmatic suggestion.
Yes.
Here are the three things that come to mind. First, we've seen really compelling uses of online platforms to crowdsource. And to mm-hmm. think about, we have so many arts institutions and leaders in this community that asking me personally to come up with how do we create equity and access, I have some ideas, but I bet we have some incredible ideas in this community. So how do we gather them, synthesize them, showcase them, and then make sure that we prioritize? So that's first. Let's crowdsource some ideas. Secondly, 2014 isn't too far away, and that's when Prop H needs to be renewed. And so we need to start thinking now, building from a coalition like the one you've started in this election, of how do we start the road to renewal for Prop H that's going to deepen the commitment, double down, take lessons learned, and take our context now into account and make sure that Prop H is renewed strongly with a strong arts component in 2014. And finally, just the idea of continuing this advocacy work, I think we can leverage some technology in that way to create the case strongly and continue, and I think it's really, really impressive that you all have come together for this forum. I think that there's a lot more that can be done in this space.
Great. Thank you.
Carlos Garcia is Barry Gordy. Dennis Kelly is the management. No, the Board of Ed is the management. The school district are the artists. Nobody's satisfied in that continuum. The artist needs more of runtime, needs more of a budget, they need a bigger budget. The manager wants more, and quite naturally, Barry Gordy don't want to give it all out. So how do you satisfy an artist? An artist need to have an unlimited budget will never be fulfilled because art is always continuously growing and continuously developing. So if you look at it in that sense, I think the management, which is right now the Board of Ed, need to be better stewards of the money when it comes time to cutting the budget or using some of those resources to backfill teachers' pay. I think they should draw the hard line and say, no, this money was made and provided for the students to have additional, you know, arts and library and things of that nature. So I think the adults need to first get out. The adults need to stand up and be the adults and say no and fight for the children who need those fundings the most. Because that's how I always view all of the budgets that come in through San Francisco. It's everything's a tack that's put aside for the children. Everybody wants to dig into that pot to take those resources to take care of their own needs. So Barry Gordy, the management, and the artists. So think about it in that perspective. Nobody's never happy. But let's make the artists happy because the art makes the world go round.
Thanks so much.
A Motown analogy. I like that. So let me share with you a couple of organizations that I've either sat on their board or participated in, sat on advisory, or my kids have participated in. And so Youth Speaks, Loco Bloco, 826 Valencia, Writers Corps, Baycat. Those are some of the organizations that I have spent a lot of time trying to articulate a narrative. So I think one of the things that we have to be able to do better is articulate the narrative of why arts education is a key reason for student achievement, why it is that it has to be institutionalized, why it is that why do we have to always fight for the funds for arts education? It should be part of what we do because it matters and because it makes a difference. So the narrative that I think that we have to work more closely together to articulate is how we can take anecdotal or even, you know, who it is that we're reaching and talk about it from a data and outcome perspective. And can we make that be part of the regular conversations that we have and not have art feel or look like it's something that is fluff or ancillary or, yes, it's great to have, but if we took it away, it really wouldn't matter. It does matter. And how do we make that narrative really clear to show that it matters so that the funding doesn't have to be fought for, but that it's just part of what we do because it makes sense. It's like math, it's like language arts, it's like the language immersion programs. You know, we fund those programs because they make sense and they benefit our kids. So how do we come together to work up what that narrative sounds like so that those that are skeptical, those that don't understand or believe in the arts the way many of us do, can feel that and see how that works.
Thank you, Hydra.
Emily Murase, I see this primarily as a funding issue and that we need strategies at the school site level, the school district-wide level, and the state level. At the school site level, exactly what Hydra's talking about, we need to educate the school site councils. I sit on the Rosa Parks School Site Council. We make really important decisions about what we're going to fund and what we're not going to fund. And these people before you, we all get it. But the average parent might perceive arts as something extra, as something, you know, that could go, you know, in terms of budget cuts. So I have a challenge for the Partnership for Creative Learning. There's an annual school site council training, and if you could be there to train some of the members of the school site council about how essential arts are, that would really make a difference in terms of individual school site budgets. At the district level, I mentioned EdMatch. Warren Hellman is a model in this way. He gives $25,000 to Lowell High School, where I also went to high school. He also gives $25,000 to Mission High School because they don't have a 30,000-member alumni association. So we need to do a better job of distributing resources among the schools. And then finally, at the state level, Senator Mark Leno has introduced important legislation to impose a 1% fee on every entertainment ticket. So that's 10 cents for every movie ticket, $1 on every symphony ticket to go to an arts fund that will be distributed throughout the state. So I think, you know, at all different levels, there are things that we can be doing to better fund arts.
Yes, Starchild. I find it interesting that, you know, the conversation about arts does seem to revolve so much around money. As I alluded to back in my answer to the first question that came up, I think what's core to being an artist is really creativity and willingness to think outside the box. So I think freedom is more important to arts in the schools than funding is ultimately. And the schools as they stand are very top-down, bureaucratic, you know, pretty rigid in their approach to education. You know, you have the bells ringing to, you know, shuttle the students from class to class each period. It's a very structured environment, which actually goes way back to the beginnings of government education in the United States, which came from a Prussian model. You know, people like Dewey, you know, were adopting a lot of those methods with the goal of making schools better preparation for putting students out into the work world of factories and regimentation in society, and also, you know, as good subjects or citizens of the state, which is why they, you know, they have the Pledge of Allegiance. You know, the students are supposed to stand and put their hand over their heart and salute the flag and all this kind of thing. By the way, I don't know how many of you know, the original Pledge of Allegiance didn't feature the hand over the heart. It actually featured a raised arm salute like this. Like the Nazi salute, which they changed after the Nazis gave it a bad reputation. But in terms of access and equity to art, what we have to look at the bigger picture in San Francisco, and the city government is driving arts out of the city. I mean, the most perhaps exciting thing to happen in recent years in the arts in San Francisco was Burning Man. Burning Man started here in the city on Ocean Beach, and the city government basically drove Burning Man out. The police came and said, "You can't do this here on the beach anymore." And unfortunately, this has been a pattern. So I would like to use my role as a school board member as kind of a bully pulpit to tell the city government, you know, stop making San Francisco an unfriendly place for art and artists, and then we can have more field trips and get the students out of the classroom to see all this great art happening already in our city without spending a bunch of extra money in the schools.
Thank you, everyone. We've come to the end of the public forum of Arts and Achievement for All. And I want to close out by reintroducing and naming each of our candidates again. On my left, Winifred Dejani, Natasha Hain, Omar Khalif, Hydra Mendoza,
thank you,
Emily Morase, and Starchild. I'd like to thank them for taking the time to share with us some of their most wonderful experiences in arts and culture, and what they would like to do to make it possible for every child here in San Francisco. I also would like to call Tom back up because he has some information about upcoming forum events, and there may be some other information. And then what I'd like to do is ask and hope that all of you, of course, are welcome to stay until 8:30 to meet and chat with our candidates. Hang on a sec.
Thank you, Moy, and thank you, everybody, for giving us of your time this evening and for thinking about these difficult issues. And as somebody who works with the district and many of us who do, these are not simple problems, and there are many solutions, and it is really, on behalf of the Partnership for Creative Learning, we look forward to working with you to help solve them. I saw many heads nod at some of the ideas this evening, and I hope that whatever three of you are elected to the Board of Education on November 2nd, which is voting day to take note of, but that and there are other board members in the entire district, we look forward to working with you to advance some of these goals that we've talked about. With that, for people who are interested in learning more about the candidates for the San Francisco Unified School District Board of Education, Parents for Public Schools is hosting two additional forums. There is a forum, and they are in partnership with other folks, and I apologize if I'm not naming them, but I don't have them with me. But they are Friday, October 22nd, from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Tenderloin Community School at 627 Turk Street. And the second forum is Wednesday, October 27th, from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Lincoln High School Auditorium at Quintara and 22nd Avenue. So I encourage you and others to come out and see the candidates again, learn more about their broader platforms for improving quality education for all students in San Francisco. And I again want to thank our event host, KQED, for having us this evening and for broadcasting this on your website tomorrow. Thank you. And again, just to name the partners who sponsored this evening, Performing Arts Workshop, Streetside Stories, Out of Sight Youth Arts Center, Leap Imagination and Learning, San Francisco Opera, Arts Providers Alliance of San Francisco, San Francisco Performances, San Francisco Symphony, and BayCat. Thank you very much.
And on behalf of everyone at KQED, I also want to thank you. This will be, as Tom just alluded to, online tomorrow at kqednews.org. Also, our news blogger, NewsFix, will be listening to it and then commenting on it. So that might be something you all might want to read. So if you know people who are interested in the school board election, then please tell them to go to kqednews.org beginning sometime tomorrow. I won't promise you exactly when. We are nonprofit. Last but not least, we consider this neighborhood safe, but it is a little dark out there, so just use some caution, just normal caution. We've never really experienced any problems, but it's always better to warn you than to not. So thanks again for coming, and a fantastic discussion. Thank you all.